to counsel for the applicant in this case. Have you given any consideration to how, if at all, you're going to divide up your argument? Can you let the court know what your plan is?
Well, I mean, part of that, Your Honor, depends on what the opening argument is here. We divided up some of the legal questions amongst ourselves, and we'll just adjust that by retaining the rule.
Fine, thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Michael Bonifazi. 30981 is my registration number, and I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Wayne Warnke. The issue before the court today is the interpretation of restrictive covenants on a property known as the Captain Cove subdivision located in Routt County outside of Steamboat Springs, Colorado. The pertinent language of the covenant that was at issue at the trial court and here today essentially is that the covenants shall run with the land and remain in full force and effect for a period of 20 years from and hereof, comma, or until amended or rescinded upon the written consent of owners of record of a majority of the lots in the said subdivision, whichever shall first occur. The issue presented to the trial court on a motion for summary judgment by a group of the defendants and responded to by the appellant was the interpretation essentially of the term amended and whether within that term amended as written in these covenants incorporates the ability to extend the duration. In this case, they were extended just about 20 years later on September 28th of 1988 to an indefinite time period. It was essentially conceded at the trial court level that the amendment did fulfill the majority of the lots of the owners in order to make that amendment. But the issue before the court is whether or not the language of the covenant itself, and in particular the word amended, subsumes the ability to extend the duration of the covenants. There is no direct case law on point in Colorado dealing with the duration and the extension of a duration of the covenants.
Excuse me, Mr. Bonifacio.
Yes.
Let me ask you a factual question. I couldn't find anywhere in the briefing what covenant is it that's causing a problem here with Mr. Warnke?
With the initial covenant that was causing a problem is there's a section in the covenants for an architectural control committee that is somewhat arbitrary in and of itself in that it allows a kind of a three-person board to determine what can be built as outbuildings and other covenant procedures with respect to the properties. My client was seeking to build a barn on his property as an outbuilding that ran into a dispute with the Architectural Control Committee at that time, which brought him back to the covenants and after a close reading decided that he believed that the extension should have never taken place in the first place and therefore brought declaratory relief to invalidate that extension. And that's really what the underlying cause was.
Okay. And under Mr. Warnke's interpretation of this 20-year period of validity clause, if we were to rule in his favor, then there would be no covenants on these properties at all.
Correct. It would be completely unencumbered property at that point. And short of the owners unanimously then deciding to reinitiate a vote to re-encumber the property, which I think they would have to do at this point under Kiowa, the common interest statute here in Colorado that obviously was not in place at the time that either these covenants were put on the property or at the time of their extension. So we're kind of outside of the statutory framework that now most common interest communities are dealing with. So you're correct, Your Honor, that it would essentially unencumber all of the property at this point. The language itself is fairly simple. It's whether the word amend subsumes the word extend. The appellant submits that it does not, that an extension is something entirely different than an amendment. an extension elongates or creates a much longer duration. An amendment simply will complement an already existing situation or a covenant. Here, creating an indefinite servitude on the land by way of an amendment where the covenants themselves do not set forth any procedure whatsoever allowing for such an extension of the duration of the time frame of the initial 20 years of these covenants is what the issue, essentially, the trial court struggled with, being that there's no direct case law on point in Colorado. All the parties had argued and submitted three different cases. One from South Carolina is the Hardy versus Aiken case, and two cases from South Carolina, the Seagate case and the Miles case, which I'll submit. The two North Carolina cases dealt with the exact same language, and I suspect it was the same developer who had put the declarations together on that property. In any event, in the Hardy case, the language at issue, and these were all three of these cases dealt with the only thing of extending the duration of the covenants. In the Hardy case, the language was any change or amendment can be made. The court in North Carolina stated that language in and of itself was ambiguous as to whether or not it would include an amendment to the duration of the covenants, and therefore defaulted to the well-known real property maxim that if a covenant running with the land is ambiguous, you must find for the unrestricted use of the property. And therefore, they struck down the covenants in that case. Equally, the two South Carolina or North Carolina cases were the same in that the Allen versus Seagate case and the Miles versus Carolina Forest Association case dealt with language very similar to the language we have here and is in Hardy. And that language stated that all of the restrictions, conditions, covenants, and agreements containing herein shall continue until January 1st, 1992, except that they may be changed, altered, amended, or revoked in whole or in part. The both times that exact language went before the North Carolina Court of Appeals, they found that the term amended and altered did not in itself subsume the right to extend. And found it to be ambiguous.
Let me ask you a question about the case law. Both sides argue the applicability or non-applicability of the three cases that you rely on, and the trial court on the other side relies on this Florida case, and then we're asked to look at some dictionary definitions as well. But is there any case law outside of the protective covenants context? For example, why wouldn't this same issue come up in the just in a basic contract interpretation issue, because what we're really dealing with is, does amend include the word extend? I mean, that's the issue, isn't it? So is there any other case law in any other context in Colorado or elsewhere that would help us with that?
Your Honor, not that I'm completely aware of. I can tell you that in briefing this, I did look at research that dealt with amendments as associated with personal contracts, for an employment contract, for example. If an employment contract has a provision that, say, the employer can amend a particular provision, does that mean that the employer can come in and then amend it to reduce the salary by half or amend it to say your 5-year employment contract is now a 2-year employment contract? I think the result I reached in that case law was essentially that would make those contracts essentially illusory and unenforceable because there's essentially a one way out for one party of the contract in which they're not essentially bound to any of the terms anyway. Because this is a covenant running with the land, they're a bit different in that they don't operate like a personal covenant. So in order to try to find some case law that somehow equates to a covenant running with the land, I was not able to find anything. So I was limited to only cases dealing with covenants running with the land, which is why I think we've only seen these four cases, including the Florida case, the Venetian Isles case, which you referenced.
Thank you. That's helpful.
Yeah. Let me follow up on that. Let's take your example of the employment contract being amended to shorten the period of employment. What would your position be on whether or not the majority of the owners of record of the lots in this subdivision voted to amend the covenants prior to the 20-year period of time to terminate in 15 years. Could they do that?
Your Honor, I think that the way it's written, in which it states the time frame is to run for 20 years, and there's been some other argument in the other briefs on this, and it says or until amended or terminated, I would think it's my position that they could not do that. They could not touch the duration until that 20 years had run. There's some case law in Colorado that deals with that exact situation, and that's the Goodbear case that has been cited, although it wasn't argued extensively in either the trial court or in the briefing before the court here today. But essentially, the Goodbear case dealt with that situation and determined that, and the Goodbears are a bit different because it said that the covenants would run for 50 years, and then at each 10-year period, it would automatically renew. And the question in Goodbear was, did you have to wait that first 50 years before you could do anything thereafter in terms of an amendment? And there they were amending existing single-family housing restrictions, not a duration issue. So it's kind of irrelevant. But to answer your question, no, the 20 years would have had to have run, and these would have had to have expired, at which point they could have decided to terminate them or to re-encumber the property by a vote under whichever statute they would have been applying at that time, which wouldn't have been Kiowa.
Mr. Bonifacio, what I'm focusing on is the language of this covenant. And when you were referring to the out-of-state cases, the language was very different, where it would refer to the covenants, and they could be amended. But in this language here, it says shall remain in full force and effect for a period of 20 years or until. And so the or until, is that amendment referring to a duration, or is that amendment referring only to the substance of the covenant?
That's a good question, Your Honor. I would submit that that's an ambiguity that's before the court, and therefore we again default to the unrestricted use of the property. Because if we limit this just to the time frame, then essentially we're reading these entire covenants as unamendable. So that if it said you could only build a two-story barn and someone wanted to build a one-story barn or a three-story barn, that this could have never, those actual covenants could have never been amended if you read this to only have applied to the one thing of having to do with the duration.
Well, and can it be read to apply to both substance and to duration?
I think that's ambiguous. I don't think it can. And I think when we're dealing with encumbering property, we have to be careful. And that's why I think very similar language in the other courts, in the South Carolina, North Carolina courts that dealt with the language, except that they may be changed, as opposed to or until amended, is essentially the same thing. And those courts came back and said, we don't like that language. It seems ambiguous. They could have been more clear in the way they drafted this to show us their clear intent. And in fact, in the Venetian Isles case, of which the respondents rely, there was a dissenting opinion that said, look, although I agree with what you're saying here in terms of reversing the trial court who found that it was ambiguous and should not continue to encumber the property, they came back, a dissenting opinion came back and said, I would have let parole evidence come in to glean that intent before we either said one way or another. And I think that's the same thing here. I think at a minimum, there should have been some parole evidence, and no evidence was taken in this as it was disposed of by summary judgment. But I think to answer your question, Your Honor, that in and of itself creates an ambiguity, which then defaults us back to the unrestricted use of the property.
I may ask another question about the language of this covenant. The very last words say, whichever shall first occur. And in that context, does that import any meaning to the word amend?
I think whichever shall first occur, it deals with whether they're amended or rescinded, rather than a duration. Rather a change of the duration. I think when whichever shall first occur essentially means the same thing as in the other cases where it says, except that they may be changed, altered, amended, or revoked in whole or in part by the record owners. I think it's essentially the same thing. It's just occurring later on in this language. But I think at the end of the day, the language that we're facing in the Captain Cove covenants looks very similar to the cases that we've seen from other jurisdictions that have dealt with it on point, of which all have found that it was ambiguous, but for two judges in the Florida opinion. If there's any other questions, I'll preserve my 38 seconds for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, members of the panel, I'm Tony Leffert at registration number 12375, and I'm here representing the Hill defendants, there are a few of them, and also the Odorsio Family Trust. The legal principle, if I could address that first, is the appellant argues that while we may have an unclear covenant here, and it should be interpreted to allow the least restrictive use of the property. The counterargument to that, of course, is what's the intent of the homeowners here? Judge Hawthorne, I think, asked an important question that is not clear in the record. I would only add that I think this is more than a barn. All of us are here today because there's substantial objections to this structure. But more importantly, and an underlying issue is, if this court were to find that these covenants have expired, you would have this entire group of homeowners with no covenants controlling where they live in this mountain property. Now, counsel has indicated that Kiowa would automatically apply. My co-counsel, Suzanne Leff, is going to address that issue, and I'm going to reserve some time for her. But I would only raise that issue for the court's consideration at that time. What's important here is the covenants themselves say the owner's desire to maintain uniform, restrictive covenants for the use and development of the lots. It's undisputed that a majority of the lot owners followed the procedure set forth to amend the covenants. The extension itself, which isn't really that focused on in the brief, has some very clear and specific language. It says in the third wherefore paragraph that the owners say it is desirable to extend the covenants indefinitely or until rescinded. The last whereas paragraph says, pursuant to said covenants, the owners of the record of a majority of the lots in said subdivision have, by written consent, agreed to the amendment of the covenants by providing for the extension of the covenants. It's undisputed that this was all done before the covenants expired. And then, of course, in the executory portion of this, it says the 20-year period is hereby rescinded. Obviously, you know, law is language, but I think that there's a strong argument here that this was an amendment first rather than an extension. It amended the time period of the covenants. This extension was in effect for 20 years before anybody challenged it until this issue came up with respect to the structure.
Mr. Leffert, let me interrupt you a minute. I don't recall from the briefs when Mr. Warnke purchased his property in the subdivision with relation to when the amendment was adopted by the majority of the property owners.
My understanding, Your Honor, and I could be incorrect, but I believe he purchased the property after that occurred, sometime during the 20-year period that they were in effect.
And this amendment was recorded in the clerk and recorder's office?
It was.
Okay.
And I think the logical conclusion there is obviously it was a matter of record. It would have been in the title work when Mr. Warnke purchased the property at that time. Judge Lichtenstein asked about some of the language of this, and I think that that's really important. The Seagate and the Miles case have an important difference, and that is they use the word except. Except. In our case, it says, shall be in effect for 20 years or until amended or rescinded. I think a plain reading of that is that they're saying, well, in the Seagate and in the Carolina Forest case, they're saying, well, these covenants are going to be in effect for X years, except that they can be amended during that time period. In our language, shall be in effect for 20 years or until it's amended, allowing for an amendment of any provision of the covenants. And I think that that's exactly what we have here. I think the Hardy-Aiken case is a little bit of a red herring here because the amendment language is in a completely different section than the language with respect to the duration. So I would submit that I'm not sure that that's probably the case that's the least similar in terms of the facts. The Venetian case, which the district court relied on, has the language that I think is most similar to the language in our covenants, which is unless sooner modified or terminated. And so I think that if you look at the intent of the homeowners and you look at the exact language of the extension, which was a matter of public record, and if you look at the intent of these homeowners to have controlling covenants that will restrict this property, subject to the provision set forth in the covenants, that there's a majority vote if there's an issue, and subject to the Architectural Review Committee, which is common, I think that all of those factors mitigate in favor of an interpretation that is consistent with the trial court. I do want to reserve some time for Ms. Leff, but I'd be happy to answer any questions on the issues that I've addressed.
Well, I do have a question about that language, whichever shall first occur, because could it not be read that the covenant could run for 20 years or until amended or rescinded, whichever shall first occur? So that would mean that the substantive covenant itself could run either for 20 years or earlier.
You're referring to the covenants in this case, Judge?
Mm-hmm.
Well, in an answer to, I think you asked a similar question to opposing counsel, my view would be is that it don't require that they run for 20 years. They can be amended any time within that 20-year period, which I think is a clear reading of what was provided here. The intent, obviously, someone put an amendment provision in there. Just by the fact that they're using the word amendments contemplates that they said, well, we may need to amend these covenants. I don't think that the period of the covenants, the duration, is any different than any other term in the covenants. And that should be allowed to be amended too. Now, it might have been a different case if 20 years expired and then there was an attempt to try to make a change. Obviously, that's a different fact, because the covenants only contemplate that it would be amended until the 20-year period expires. I'm not sure if I answered your question, Judge.
Yeah, I think I'm just wondering if the amendment applies only to the substantive covenant or whether it can also be to the time period, because with that language, whichever shall first occur, couldn't that just limit the amendment to only the substantive, and then, excuse me, amendment of the substantive covenant?
Well, I think that the time period is a substantive covenant. I think it's just one of the other terms of the covenants. In my view, and maybe I'm missing your point, I think that it's just one of the terms of the covenants, the time period that they were to be run. So my argument would be that yes, amendment could relate to the time period.
Let me follow up on that, and I'm not sure if I'm understanding Judge Lichtenstein's question properly, but it would appear to me that if you have or until amendment or rescinded, and amendment occur, and amendment applies only to the substantive covenants and not the extension, then you would end up with the result that any time you amended a substantive portion of the covenants prior to 20 years, then the covenants would be terminated. I think that's possibly what Judge Lichtenstein is asking.
Oh, I see. Or until, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, or until amended. 20 years or until amended. And if the amendment only applies to the substantive portion, anytime you amended the substantive portion, it seems like you would automatically terminate all the covenants.
And if that were the interpretation, then of course it completely undercuts the intent of these folks when they started this, the developers, which was, we want to have covenants that run for 20 years with these terms. Or unless there's a modification. I mean, clearly there was an intent that there be covenants controlling the land, and clearly there was an intent to allow modifications to it. So my argument would be that that interpretation would not be consistent with the overall document and the intent of the homeowners. I'd like to reserve some time for co-counsel. If there's any other questions, I'd be happy to answer them now. Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Suzanne Leff, attorney number 35930. The discussions have focused on that amendment provision in particular, and I would like to remind the court that in construing covenants, the standard that applies in Colorado is to construe the covenants as a whole based on the underlying purpose of the covenants. And here, this case is about more than just the meaning of the word amend or that amendment provision itself. It's about how the modification clauses in real property restrictive covenants have been interpreted in Colorado and how they are intended to apply. And in this state, the Colorado Supreme Court has recognized that the dictionary definition of certain terms are not sufficient to determine that meaning of the modification clause. In Evergreen Highlands versus West, the Colorado Supreme Court applied a test that looked at the substantial burden of the modification and the foreseeable impact of the modification.
I guess you're going to go there ultimately, but wasn't Evergreen a Kiowa case? And if so, I mean, that was one of the first things I thought of when I read the briefs, is I don't see any mention of the act here. And I assume both parties agree that for whatever reasons, the act doesn't apply. So if that's the case, why should we be looking at the Evergreen case?
In Evergreen Highlands, the court first determined how that modification clause applied, and then it allowed the implied assessment provision. So the court first looked at how modification clauses apply in a range of restrictive covenants and did not limit that evaluation to Kiowa-controlled communities. And for that reason, it seems relevant to apply the same test here to this case. Even though we're not bringing this case as though the Captain's Cove community is a Kiowa community, and we would just leave that as an issue that would be determined in separate proceedings. It's not something that's been addressed for this specific matter. But in Evergreen Highlands, the court first looked at that modification clause and determined that the various cases that were discussed in both the Zito line and the Lakeland line of cases all had modification clauses with different types of language. And the thing that the court could discern from those different clauses is that there is some sort of burden and there is some sort of foreseeability of the impact of the modifications that were actually applied. Here, we have a set of covenants that have an underlying purpose of controlling the use and development of the properties within the community. At the time that the covenants were amended in 1988, the developer still owned at least 9 lots, and we don't know how many of the lots were developed at that point. So even the underlying purpose of the covenants had not been achieved by 1988. And if we look at, if we look at these covenants in the context of the time period that they were drafted, in 1969, there was still a concern that the rule against perpetuities might affect these types of covenants. So a 20-year time limit was something that was often written into the covenants. Yet there was an amendment provision that allowed for the achievement allowed for these covenants to ultimately apply for an indefinite period. And that's what was affected in 1988.
Counsel, let me ask you another question. Even if we were to agree with you that this kind of alternate interpretive methodology should apply here, is that something that we as an appellate court can engage in, or the trial court even on summary judgment, or doesn't that involve lots of factual determinations, just like the ones you were talking about that you couldn't deal with at summary judgment, and certainly as an appellate court, we couldn't deal with?
First of all, in my brief, I presented this as an alternative argument. I would say that the Evergreen Highlands analysis can apply in the context of construing the covenants as a whole according to their plain meaning and looking at the burden and the foreseeability of the modification that was applied by the owners through their consent. And here we have the facts to show that there was no amendment to the terms of the covenants themselves. They were the original covenants, which at common law and under the restatement often receive deference and are permitted to continue. Section 7.10 of the restatement favors modification of covenants where there are express terms that permit the owners to extend them for a similar purpose like we have here. So we have facts to show that there wasn't a substantial burden. It was just a continuation of the same covenants. And it was foreseeable because more than a majority of the owners actually consented to the extension of the covenants, showing that they favored that extension. There wasn't an objection at the time that the covenants were extended in 1988. And there weren't objections until Mr. Warnke purchased his property in 2004. And not even then. It wasn't until 2008 when he raised the issue. So with the application of the Evergreen Highlands analysis, it still permits the court to construe the covenants as a whole, apply the plain meaning of the covenants, and the appellees would requests that the court affirm the trial court's decision based on the plain, unambiguous language of the covenants as supported by the Evergreen Highlands analysis.
Thank you, Ms. Leff. Mr. Bonifazi, you've got about a half a minute.
Thank you. Your Honors, I would state that the Evergreen case doesn't apply. It's a Kiowa case. And the maxims that are the legal maxims set forth in the Evergreen case are essentially the same that are dealt with all covenants. Construing these as a whole, I agree that's the way you look at it. And based on the questions from Judge Lichtenstein, it's exactly that. If you construe them as a whole with the language of whichever shall first occur, it makes it ambiguous as to what you're amending. Can you only amend the time frame? Can you amend the substantive covenants themselves? Thank you.
Thank you to both counsel for your arguments. The case will stand submitted and opinion will issue in due course. That completes the docket for our oral arguments today. And the bailiff may announce a recess.
All rise. The court will be in recess, subject to call.